I love the Sermon on the Mount. It is a power passage from the awesome Word of God, but it is a recorded sermon of Jesus. It has in it so many lessons. I like to preach it. I like to read it. It's just filled with things that we need to keep in mind as we live the Christian life. As I said, it's a recorded sermon from Jesus himself, one of the longest sermons, but even at that, it follows Huffmaster's formula for a good sermon. It starts off with an awesome beginning with the Beatitudes, or as could well be and is translated in some other translations, it could be translated happy. It could be the happy attitudes. So it starts off with a great beginning and the powerful ending. Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth my will. And then whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them are like unto a wise man that builds his house upon the rock. Whoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not is like unto a foolish man who builds his house or his life up on the sand. So a good beginning, a powerful ending, and the Lord keeps them pretty close together. So that's Huffmaster's formula for a really good sermon, he tells me. So Jesus followed that, and it is an awesome sermon. You could just take your finger and just open it and just put it like that and preach on wherever you pointed your finger, but tonight, I want us to particularly look at the passages that were read by Pete there a moment ago. Here we see in these passages the characteristics of the ethic of the Christian life. What Jesus is saying here is he's telling us how we need to conduct ourselves and how our lives needs to be different than those that are not Christians. The Sermon on the Mount was preached on a little mountain, a little hill just outside of the city of Capernaum, close to the Galilean Sea. And the thought here that Jesus is trying to get across is he's saying that he wants our life as Christians to be filled with joy and happiness and blessedness and gladness and rejoicing. I don't know where we get this idea that the Christian life has to be all sad face and gloom and doom. It should be and can be, and Jesus wants it to be, obviously, from the sermon that he preached here, a happy life. We bought into this thing that the only pleasure that a person can have is when he's sinning. That's not true. It's certainly not true and should not be true. We as Christians ought to be the happiest people in the world. And that's what the master teacher was trying to do throughout the sermon, actually. But specifically, here in this little part of it, I call it Jesus' recipe for happiness. So let's see what the master had in mind here. Well, first of all, he says that we need to learn to turn the other cheek. But I say to you, do not resist him who is evil, but whosoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other cheek also. So, what did Jesus mean by this statement? Well, there's a lot more here than we first meet the eye. Jesus is not talking about pacifism here. He's not talking about war. He's not talking about self-defense. He's not talking about the necessity to protect our nation or our home or even our own selves. That's not what he has in mind at all. But he is stating a great principle. Do not try to get even. Do not take revenge. This is what the Lord is pointing out here. He's pointing out the danger of building up resentment and trying to seek to hurt somebody else more than what they hurt you. Do to somebody else more than what they've done to you. Jesus was one that practiced this principle. Because during his ministry, they said some really bad things about him. They said that he was a gluttonous man. They said he was a wine babbler. They said he didn't keep the law, that he was a friend of tax collectors and harlots, meaning that he was like the company that he kept. They said a lot of things, bad things, hurtful things about Jesus. Isaiah predicted in Isaiah 53 verse 7, he said he was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb that was led to the slaughter and like a sheep that was silent before his shearers, so he did not open his mouth. Isaiah 53 and verse 7. Jesus truly was one that did not seek revenge. And that's the kind of life that he commends to you and to me. One night about 10 o'clock, a very famous surgeon received a phone call from a very wealthy, a very famous painter. And the call seemed very urgent. And so the great famous surgeon responded. When he got to the painter's house, the painter led him through the mansion of a place, back to a sunroom, and there on some pillows was a little poodle with a broken leg. Well, the famous surgeon was quite startled at first, but he kind of swallowed his pride and began to attend to the little poodle. And he set its little leg and bandaged it and put a little cast on it, just as if he were attending a king in a mansion somewhere. So when he finished, the painter said, "Doctor, send me a bill. Whatever it is, I don't care. I'll pay it." The doctor said, No, I won't send you a bill, but come by my office next week and we'll settle up." So the painter did. He went by the doctor's office the next week. The doctor led him through the office there, back to a closet of a room in the back. And nothing was in there except this file cabinet with some paper stacked on it and a can of white paint sitting down beside it and an old cheap paintbrush. And the surgeon said with a smirk, "You paint this file cabinet and we'll call it even." Well, the painter looked at it, and then he asked the surgeon, he said, are you going to use this room for the next couple of days?" The surgeon said, "No." He said, "Can I have a key to it?" And he said, "Yes." So the doctor gave him a key, and the next few days, the painter worked painting the cabinet. When he had finished, he went out and told the doctor, he said, "I'm finished. Would you want to come look at it?" When the doctor went in, there on that cabinet, file cabinet, was a masterpiece of just unbelievable quality. Surgeon stood there for a moment, with a little misty eye. He held his hand out and he said, "You're a lot better man than I am." He said, "I'm going to take this home and put it in my living room, but I'm not going to tell how ugly I was to you." Now, the painter could have slapped some white paint on the cabinet, and they probably would have been enemies for the rest of their days. Instead, they became very, very close friends. That's what Jesus is talking about here. He's talking about being bigger than the world. And he's saying, one of the great recipes for happiness is to not take revenge, be bigger than the world. Another of his recipes is love your enemies. Matthew 5 and verse 44, he said, "But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." You've heard me say before, when making reference to this passage of Scripture, that it's one of the hardest things that I have to do. It is very, very difficult for me to pray for my enemies. And especially when I see the atrocious things that they do, the ISIS group, the 911 thing, the just horrible, terrible things that they do to humanity. Certainly enemies of our nation, enemies that are very, very difficult to pray for. What the Lord was, and this back during this time, this was a tough thing, because the Jews were oppressed by the Roman government. A lot of things were going on that were horrible back then as well. So when Jesus comes up and says, "Pray for your enemies," it's a hard thing. But what he's saying here is that not only is it good for to pray for your enemies, it's good for you. It's good for us to pray for our enemies. A preacher down in Texas told about one time whenever he was in a gospel meeting and he had preached on this thought. Said he had gotten back to the hotel and had settled in for the night, and the phone rang. And it was a lady from the audience who had heard him preach that. And she said, "Preacher, I can't do it." And he said, you can't do what? And she said, I can't pray for someone that's used me despitefully. I just can't do it." And she said, "And I'm miserable." And that's the whole thought that Jesus is trying to get across to us. But you say, well, you know, it's human nature to strike back to those that strike you. Those that are treating you despicably, to treat them back the same thing. And that's, you know, that's where I went wrong and what I'm struggling with. And that's exactly what we all struggle with on this thing, because it's not human nature that we're talking about here. You're exactly right. It is human nature not to want to pray for your enemies. But the whole point that Jesus is trying to impress on us here is that we are to be of a divine nature, not a human nature. And he lays down for us an example that is undeniably plain. Hanging on the cross. You remember. Father, forgive them. For they know not what they do. Prayer does change things. As truly as it changes the one who prays. And so, we add that to our recipe for happiness. And then we find that Jesus says in verse 45, imitate God. Here's the way he says it. In order that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven, for he causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends the rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Jesus was saying that if you turn the other cheek, if you go the second mile, if you pray for those that despitefully use you, then you will be children of your Father which is in heaven. You will be different from the world. You will have a light in a world that doesn't go the second mile, that doesn't pray for their enemies, that does not care about whether or not the enemies love them or don't love them or what. You will be different, the Master says. They will know that you belong to God because you cannot do those things unless God dwells in you. One Christmas, a little urchin boy was standing outside a store window and longingly looking at the toys that were displayed in the window. A man came along and he said, "Son, what do you want for Christmas?" And he said, I'm not going to get anything for Christmas. He said, my father lost his job, and it's all that mother can do to, with her small job, to pay our rent and buy us some groceries. So I'm not going to get anything for Christmas. But it's okay. I understand. The man was so touched that he took the little boy inside, and he bought him some toys and some clothes, and he took him to the grocery store and he bought some groceries, and carrying them, walking home with the little boy to take them home to his parents. And the little boy looked up at him and he said, "Mister, are you God?" And he said, with a little chuckle, he said, no, son, I'm not God. I'm just one of his children." But that's the whole point. That's what Jesus is trying to say. Do you want to be like God? Then you have to be different than the world. Because God is different from the world. And his children need to be different as well. So what is God's recipe for happiness? Well, simple things like turn the other cheek, or pray for your enemies, or go the second mile, or return kindness to those that have done an evil thing to you. So when you put it all together and you mix it all up, what as comes out as a result is Christ's formula for happiness, His recipe. May God give you the grace and the determination to this coming week, let your light so shine that others may see your good works, glorify your Father in heaven. And not only will God give you a blessing, but you'll be a blessing to the world around you. Will you come while together we stand and sing?